This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit. And by Unity, the free personal media server. With Unity, you can access, stream, and share any media stored on your computers from your mobile devices. For more information and to download Unity for free, visit getunity.com/knowhow. That's getyounity.com/knowhow. Today on Know How,
your questions, our answers.
Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballister.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next half an hour to 45 minutes, we're going to be showing you some of the things that we've been geeking out to so you can take them home and geek out on your own.
More like people who have geeky questions to ask
us. That's it. Yes. See, that's why I had the quizzical, you know, question thing going on. Yes, that's right. We're going to be taking some of your questions from our Google Plus group, and we're going to be throwing them up here because you guys actually ask a lot of really good questions. We know we promise to do this more often, and we've been kind of not doing that. Sorry about that. So we're going to make it up for you by giving you an entire episode of nothing but your questions and our answers. Let's kick it off. Who do we got, Brian?
All right. This first one comes from T. No Hands, and he asks, while looking at my cell on its wireless charging stand, I thought about how it might had a LiPo battery similar to most power-hungry devices. I then thought, what about putting the components for wireless charging on a drone? If the components are light enough, drones could land on a charging pad and continue on after being charged. Is it possible to safely wire and operate?
Good question. And actually,
I would say yes.
Yes. Now, you're not going to be using that Qi standard that a lot of phones are using right now because that's too low power. It's just not going to be able to provide you. I mean, you could do it, but the drone would have to land for like 10 hours for you to recharge the battery.
I guess you wouldn't have to worry about your, you know, wearing out the battery too fast.
No, that's definitely a trickle charge.
Slowly charging, yeah.
Actually, you know what? Depending on how much draw you had just from the flight controller, you might not be able to charge it fast enough.
Oh.
Yeah. And not only that, but the induction, the resonance induction charging that they use in Qi charging, it's really, really close contact. It doesn't get through a lot. So you almost have to have the two pads touching one another in order to make it work properly. What we need is a wireless charging mechanism that will penetrate through some material that will go a little bit of a distance, you know, maybe an inch or two, and provide high enough current so that you could charge something like a laptop, which would be equivalent to charging a quadcopter battery.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've always liked the idea of wireless charging, but in actual practice, it's just been so much faster to just plug in a device.
Yeah, and even the places that provide wireless charging experiences, like, for example, when I was still a Delta Diamond member and I got free club access, they have them on all the countertops, which no one ever used because very few people had phones that had the Qi charging enabled.
Right.
And even then, it looked kind of weird because you have like a mat on top of a table, so you had to like move the mat out of the way if you wanted to get regular work done. There was always the promise. People told us, oh, they're going to start building this into dashboards. They're going to build tables with them. And yeah, those existed, but they weren't great, and they were typically very expensive.
Exactly. So, but I'm guessing you might have some solution for them?
I might. In fact, I don't. No. But someone from Intel might. Now, folks, this comes from Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. I am sorry for the audio and video quality. Unfortunately, I found this part of the Intel booth after the camera crew had gone back, and I thought I had to capture this, so I captured it on my phone. But without further ado, here's the answer to T. No Hands' question.
Hi, my name is Joey Fish, and I'm going to show you a short demonstration of wireless charging, a product that Intel is sponsoring and promoting to make charging much easier for notebooks and handhelds. So what I'm showing here is the charging area above the table. We have a charging transmitter installed under the table. which is able to penetrate with a magnetic resonance field in a small area on and above the table. The advantage of this particular technology is the spatial freedom. As you can see, I don't have to have any kind of level of care of how I place the device. I'm able to place multiple devices together. What you're seeing here is just a demonstration of a transmitter. Ultimately, this will be integrated into the phone, making it very, very easy for a user to just come and place a device on the table on the surface. An interim phase of this will probably be using cases, very nicely designed cases that are thin and readily available to then put the phone in and then just use that as a very easy way to charge the device.
Now, what I like about that technology over what we see with Qi charging is, first of all, you saw how far away it could get and still charge.
At least about an inch or a couple inches.
And that wasn't a specially designed table. That was a table. They put the pad underneath, and it had to penetrate at least an inch of surface.
Okay. So, that's what I was wondering. I was like, well, sure, it can transfer that far when it's sitting above it, but what if you put something in between?
Actually, Alex, go ahead and run that B-roll, because the sticker that you see, that's just a sticker. That's not the pad. The pad is actually underneath the table.
So,
I mean, look at that. So you're talking about like 3 inches away, and that's through wood, and this technology will actually go through non-ferrous metals right now. Now, here's the cool thing. So that device is going to trigger it so that it will keep the lights on, and this is what it looks like. And the nice thing about this kind of technology is if you need more current, you just add more of those coils. This technology right now will charge a phone, but it will also charge a laptop, a large enough. So if you had a laptop bottom that had like 3 or 4 of those coils, it would provide you with enough current to go ahead and charge the battery.
Okay.
On a quadcopter, let's say take our Alien X, you could easily put 4 coils on the bottom of the chassis, and if it landed, as long as it landed close enough to that setting, that spot, it will start charging the battery.
Okay.
Surprisingly enough, I did manage to walk away with this. This is from Mobile World Congress. This is what's inside. There's not a whole lot.
Wasn't it just a coil?
A coil? So this is the coil. This part right here, that's the coil that interacts with the magnetic field that's being created by the base station. All this is a tiny bit of logic, because what's going to happen is when that base station signals, that's why it was blinking?
Right.
So when it signals, this chip is going to say, I'm a device, go ahead and start sending me power. And that's when it becomes solid. That's when the lights actually turn on.
Okay.
Yeah, and then it's just a simple wired connection. So one's going to a micro USB and one's going to a lightning connector. Mm-hmm. This actually worked incredibly well. And this is the first gen device. So I can't wait to see what they create. Now this, I actually took this out once. It's kind of hard. It's stuck in there. But this whole assembly, once you take away all the stuff that you don't need, like the connectors, it weighs something like 3 grams.
So that's pretty cool, because I don't know, the idea of carrying around another little dongle to just wirelessly charged doesn't really appeal to me, but if it was like he showed later, it was integrated into a case, which means then
totally
if my phone
do
doesn't support wireless charging, then I can at least use it. Or if you have like a protective laptop case that went around it, that I like. But having to carry around another little like device just so that I can use wireless charging, it's like, well, I'll just bring a cable.
Precisely. but where else I could see that being useful is you could now just stick it to the underside of a table. You don't have to do like drilling in and making sure the pad's up top. As long as it's within 3 inches of the device that you're trying to charge, the magnetic induction will get through.
I think I like the idea if you had a tool table or somewhere where you basically build your quads or you set up your quads, and instead of having to detach the battery from the quad every time you fly it, you just, when you're done flying, you set it on the table, and then you come back to it later and it's charged.
And you know what? This is the future. Let's be honest. Everything is going wireless.
I hope so.
We were just waiting because the wireless technologies really didn't provide enough power. Now that they can provide enough power and they can provide it relatively efficiently, you're going to see more and more of our everyday devices opt for the wireless charging.
Oh, isn't that Nikola Tesla's dream? Yeah. Wireless power?
Well, you know Apple wants it because that's one less port. That's one. I mean, they hate ports. That's one less port you have to put on the phone or the tablet.
That's right. And so in Apple's effort to get rid of the ports, we will have wireless power.
Right.
Finally.
Yeah. Actually, something else that same engineer, because we talked a really long time. That was a very small snippet of what we talked about. He was saying, what he thought was that this kind of technology, because it's so cheap to deploy and because it works really, really well, mm-hmm. you could actually see devices with smaller batteries, with the users thinking, I'm always going to find someplace to charge.
Right.
Right.
No, I can see that. Because if, say, you only need it to be charged for a couple of hours, because between that time, you will be setting it on your car dash,
yeah.
or you will be setting it on your desk.
Well,
or...
it's even better than that. He showed me a demonstration where he had two phones that had the coils already on their back in the little case,
yeah.
and a prototype laptop, and he had it in a satchel bag, and he put the backpack down on the table, and all three started charging in the bag, all kind of jumbled.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh. So, like, every time I put my bag down next to my desk, the stuff inside starts charging. Yes, I'm down for that.
I like that. Because the limiting factor is no longer the battery. So
yeah.
you don't have to keep putting larger capacity batteries into a phone or
right.
a car or, you know.
I just know that every time I go to my desk or I go to my classroom or I go to my bed or I go to my car, I throw it in the trunk and there's a magnetic coil under there. I'll start charging it.
Well, and then ideally, maybe the day will be you just have the device in your pocket and the distance between it and whatever it's receiving the power from is enough that you don't ever have
Whoa,
to...
Whoa, slow down, Brian.
Sorry.
Slow down, okay?
Well, all right,
Look,
all
we're
right.
trying to be visionary here,
I know,
but I don't want power beamed into my pockets.
Well, so say you could just get by with a 500 milliamp battery on a phone because wherever you go, yeah. it's always charging.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, now that they gave me one of these, and I've actually got a pad incoming,
mm-hmm.
I do want to try this. I want to see how much power I can get out of it to, say, charge like our 150 class quadcopter.
Yeah, because that's a relatively tiny battery,
exactly.
right?
We'll see. We'll
okay,
see.
Cool.
All right, let's go. Let's move on. We actually have an interesting drone question. Not the first time that this has been asked, so I think we should handle it. What do we got, Brian?
All right, this one comes from Francisco, and he asks, I would like to watch a future episode of Know How that shows how to create a drone using a Raspberry Pi, either a second or third generation. So he wants to use a Raspberry Pi to make a drone, which I'm...
You can...
Do it, yeah.
You would have to do a few things. You would have to add an IMU.
Right.
So remember from last episode.
Gyroscope, accelerometer.
So, yeah. But that's relatively easy. I mean, we know how to do that. We could use the GPIO header in order
right.
to get that in there. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Any computer that has a file system is an abject failure when it comes to doing something that an embedded system should do. I'm not saying you can't do it with a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it's like taking a tool that's not designed for something and
right.
doing that thing with it, even though there's this other tool over here that does it perfectly well.
Okay.
Because when you're dealing with a Raspberry Pi, you're dealing with a computer that is well, it's more complicated. It has a file system. So
right.
off the bat, let's look at some of the problems. If it has a file system, it has a boot time. And a Raspberry Pi is not an instant boot. I mean, so it takes a while for it to get warmed up. It takes a while for it to get booted into its operating system.
Definitely.
And then it will take a while for it to start up the software for controlling the quadcopter. The other thing is you can't just pull power from a Raspberry Pi.
That
will destroy it. You need to send a kill command in order to shut down safely.
Right.
So already that's going to disrupt what most quadcopter pilots do. When you're done, you just yank the battery.
Turn it off.
Just
yeah, you don't have to put in a shutdown command.
Because that would be silly.
It can be done where you have a relay switch that sends
yes.
the signal to the Raspberry Pi to shut down.
But it's still a shutdown procedure.
But it kind of sounds like you're turning into a Rube Goldberg machine
right.
to achieve something that...
Which you can do. I mean, I'll do this. If you really want me to build a drone out of a Raspberry Pi, I can do it. I will not like it. I will not fly it after we demonstrate it. Because an embedded device with an Atmel chipset or even
right.
like an Intel Curry chipset will do it so much better.
Right.
And since it's embedded, you could power it on or off. And it's fault tolerant. Embedded systems are designed to always be on
okay.
versus a Raspberry Pi, which starts getting wonky.
Yeah.
Even if you don't do bad things to it, a Raspberry Pi can get wonky. That's, you know, it's part of the fun.
Well, you're introducing a whole new set of problems that wouldn't be an issue if you just
yeah.
cut out the middleman.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I will say, there is a good idea here.
Mm-hmm.
I would, and because I have... I would use an embedded device like an Atmel chipset or like a Curry
mm-hmm.
to do all the flight control. So that's balance, that's control, the ESCs so that I have a way to make it go forward and back, left, right, up and down, right? That I could use with the embedded device because I want something that's guaranteed to work all the time.
Right.
And then I can have a Raspi behind that, between it and my receiver. Mm-hmm. And the Raspi could actually do things like mapping. Like, let's say I wanted to do waypoint. That's actually a good thing for the Raspi to do. You hook it up to a GPS. It sends commands to the flight controller, and the flight controller then acts on those commands.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Or you could do acrobatic performance things,
right,
where you tell the Raspberry Pi to tell the Arduino to do flip, you know, rotate, turn around, do sort of thing like that. So if you wanted to do sensory avoidance
right,
characteristics, could you do that with the Raspberry Pi?
I could do that with the Raspberry Pi. Yeah. Absolutely.
So hook up the ultrasonic sensors.
Yeah. Remember, like, NV Drones. NV Drones was on the show not too long ago, and actually also on Coding 101. And they made the little board that, it just like this, it went behind the flight controller. And the idea is, if it fails, it falls back to the receiver. So now you've got your back into manual control.
You want
if your Raspberry Pi fails in the midair, and it's the one keeping it in the air, your quadcopter falls out of the sky, which it's bad.
So the way I'm imagining it is that the Arduino is like would be the reflexes, the thing that everything falls back onto, and whereas the Raspberry Pi would be the brain would you'd send signals to be like, do a map, do an acrobatic trip, or do, you know, a collision avoidance.
Yeah. So I guess the short answer to this is, Francesco, we can do it. We probably wouldn't use it to be the flight controller. I know there have been a few know-it-alls who have been really adamant about using a complicated computer to be the flight controller.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it. It's just a bad idea. There's no reason for you to do it other than to say you did it. And then you should never do it again.
Right. It seems like trying to use a flathead screwdriver and a Phillips screw.
You can do it. You totally
can
do it. But the Phillips is right over there, and it does such a better job.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and move on. We've actually got a networking question.
All right, this is a long one. This one comes from Steven, and he asks, I can use some networking help from a great knowledge base called KnowHow. Hey, that's us.
Ooh, how about that?
I have a small network with several devices wired into my router, Netgear WNDR3400V2. I could use some help so I can get the best performance with multiple unmanaged switches. Router port 1 is connected to a switch. That switch has two HD home run tuners, one home theater PC, one PC used to access the router. Router port 2 is connected to a HTPC. Router port 3 is connected to a switch. That switch is connected to one PC used for a home office with a VPN connection to the office, and the one HTPC for streaming the home run tuners. I also have several Wi-Fi devices connect to the router. Whew. My issue is that when I am working my work PC slows down if I'm streaming audio, watching Netflix, etc. I don't have a slowdown on my work PC when I unplug it from the switch and run it straight to the router. How can I get the bandwidth I need for my office and keep the rest of the household happy?
Whoa, okay.
Okay, I think I know what he's doing, but I almost wish we had a diagram.
I know, we should have drawn that out. So, Steven, the answer is stop watching Netflix.
just don't stream anything.
Don't
do any gaming. basically, just don't have fun on your computer anymore.
Okay, so this is actually a very common issue. People are talking about, well, where's the bottleneck in my network? And obviously, there is a problem, because he says that when he runs straight to the router, he doesn't experience a slowdown.
Which makes
sense. But when he runs through the switch, he does.
Right.
So that tells me that there is a congestion point. Now, there are a couple of different ways to find a congestion point. Unfortunately, the ones that I know that are the best require managed switches. If I had managed switches, I could look at my stats and find, port 7 is at capacity. That's where my bottleneck is. Unfortunately, you don't have that. Now, we do have the visual picture. So you've got your router, and then you've got a switch. And that switch is connected to your two tuners, your home theater PC, and the PC that accesses the router as sort of a backup. You've got a router port 2 connected straight to a home theater PC. Router port 3 is connected to a switch, which is then connected to all your office devices.
And that's where he's getting the bottleneck.
He's saying that when he accesses the like Netflix, so he's streaming, the other devices on that network start to freak out. Here's the issue.
What do you do?
There's nothing that you're doing. Netflix should not stress a gigabit Ethernet pipe. What I would do, the immediate thing I would do, is I would check all the routers to make sure the link lights are lighting up under gig, so 1,000. Because if they're lighting up under 100, what it could be is it could be that you've got an excessively long cable, or it could mean you've got an unrated device that's dropping you down to a 100 megabit per second link. That actually would choke with that much data. At a gigabit, running Netflix, it shouldn't be a problem. Unless you've got gigabit fiber to the outside world and you are streaming Super 8 4K HD on three different PCs, there's nothing that you're doing that should impede the flow of data.
I feel like he would have been specific if that were the case.
I think so. Now here is the other thing, though. You can do a few things to mitigate. You're saying that when your PC is connected directly to the router, you don't experience a slowdown. That tells me that it's localized within that router port 3 switch. So get off the router port 3 switch. Take the PC that you think is generating the most amount of traffic and plug it into router port 4 and bypass altogether. Again, I can't tell because you've got an unmanaged switch, and I can't really tell you to do anything because an unmanaged switch is an unmanaged switch.
Okay.
What you could possibly do, and you can go back to a couple of episodes ago, actually 2 years ago, where we showed you the original Wireshark tapping episode. If you put a tap right there, it will give you traffic count. And if that traffic count is getting close to the limit of gigabit Ethernet, then that's your bottleneck. Unfortunately, when it gets down to unmanaged switches,
things get kind of confusing.
It's just hard because you have no really good tools to tell you what's going on.
To pinpoint the problem.
Yeah. But it does sound like there's that switch is congested for some reason.
Okay. So say if he goes out and he buys a managed switch, is that going to be much more expensive?
Crazy, ridiculously more expensive.
So it's not like you can rent that piece of hardware, right? And then plug it in and figure out.
You can, but that doesn't really help you.
Right, because then you have to switch it back.
What I would say is if you're using unmanaged switches, they are so dang cheap. Yeah. So if you know you've got congestion on a switch, remove some of the devices from that switch.
Okay.
That's the simple, cheap way to do it.
Yeah, it sounds like he doesn't have a way of doing that.
No.
All right.
We're going to do an episode where I'm going to show you how to make a tap. And,
And then analyze your data.
Analyze your traffic. Okay. When we come back, Brian, I wanted to veer away a little bit from the feedback. There is a device that I thought we should probably take a look at because you will remember a few weeks ago I went to the Game Developer Conference.
Yes.
In San Francisco.
I was jealous. I wish I was there.
You were so jelly. But the big thing was VR. And the ability to create immersive environments and the ability to create content that you can consume with those wonderful, wonderful goggles.
Right.
We're going to take a look at a piece of tech that I actually found at CES that I think we're going to be getting into the studio, but Alex is cutting away to way, way fast. that was not it. We're going to show you how I think people are going to be capturing content in the near future. But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How. And it's DigitalOcean. Now, DigitalOcean is the best place if you're a developer, if you are a project builder, or if you just want to get something up on the internet. It is how you get that thing on the internet. Oh, Brian, you've heard me make this pitch before. The old way to do it was to buy yourself a server, make sure the software is set up properly, maybe get the transactional, a contract, maybe make a contract with your ISP to make sure you're guaranteed a certain amount of bandwidth. And, of course, you got a contract with someone to actually take care of the server while it's in the colo.
Yeah, it was a complicated process, and me and Alex also thought it would be a fun project to try and take an old PC and do that sort of thing.
No, it was not. Totally not. I mean, you can do it, yes, and kudos if you try to do that. But if you want a system that isn't just easier to set up, easier to maintain, and easier to expand, then you want to use DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean uses droplets. It's a way to containerize your app, your service, your next-gen product, and put it onto servers that can be spread across a single location, across a state, across a country, across the entire world. Now, DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including Twit's Randall Schwartz, Aaron Newcomb, and me. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API, and you get to choose your OS. Do you like Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, FreeBSD? Well, it's up to you what you use. You can select from one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly, or you could build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs and state-of-the-art data centers around the world. Now, DigitalOcean is highly scalable. That means it can meet your demands, and it can go everything from that single instance deployment for just a few minutes in order to test your service all the way up to the worldwide deployment when your service is ready to go prime time. And the wonderful thing is it's just changing a few settings in your control panel. You can also use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. They've got an extremely active community, which I find to be incredibly important. Because when you've got users who actually want to help other users, it means your service is good. It also means your service is actually making a difference. It's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. There's really no reason not to at least try DigitalOcean, except maybe price. And I'm about to get rid of that reason. You see, DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing with servers starting at just $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so that you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code KNOWHOW for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do for you. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of KNOWHOW. Hey, Brian.
What's up?
You want to see a little preview of something that you missed at GDC, but I was really excited to see, even though you were totally jelly?
Pour salt in the wound, huh?
Let's do that. Hey, Alex, go ahead and pour some salt in the wound.
With the advent of VR headsets that have true high-definition quality, you need to somehow get the content made. Now, you could patch together a series of cameras and perhaps stitch the image into something that does or does not look right, or you could just come to Gyroptic. I'm speaking with Richard, who's going to explain what the 360 cam can do for you. Richard, what is this?
Well, your life is not running in a frame, so your regular camera is capturing a frame that is 16 by 9. What we do is we capture a sphere, we capture your environment. So it's made of three fisheye lenses. It's looking in three different directions, and it's actually taking the data, not missing anything. The only blind spot would be where actually standing and where the camera is being set. We stitch the images in real time inside the device. Why do you care about real time? Well, your smartphone is real time. Video is real time. You don't want post-processing. You don't want to go to your computer to do stitching and long processing. Three microphones. Why? You want surround sound. Surround sounds meaning like HMD, I rotate up, down, all around, and I get different type of sound. Gyroscope inside for one simple reason, that if you rotate the camera, it's still a sphere rotating on itself. You don't want to see anything happening in your headset. So if we do that, we stabilize the image. Wi-Fi, GPS, because Google Street View made pictures geolocalized. So we thought that that was definitely necessary. Very simple product, less than 200 grams, $500, available on 360.tv.
Okay, now we got to geek out over the specs. And tell me, why did you go with the three-camera approach? Because there are many different vendors who are doing two cameras on either side with fisheye lenses. There are some vendors who are doing multiple cameras, 20 cameras. What made you decide that three was the number for you?
Well, three made the number because first you get a cute design. That's one thing. The second thing is we use regular lenses, like fisheye lenses. We need to go with molding lenses. We're definitely looking at 2, 4, and so on. 3 was the number, like, in terms of price, quality, and, like, what we wanted to achieve, definitely.
All right, now, for those people who are looking at this product and they're saying, I like this, I want to play with this, tell me what would be the process. So they mount this on their head. Let's say they're wearing a hat with a 360 cam. Once they film it, what can they do with it? How do they process it? How do they push it out?
So, again, no process. One button, you press, it starts recording. Helmet, on a pole, wherever, like on the table during Christmas. Like Christmas was, it's past, but for next year's Christmas, press the button, it records in 360 degree. What you get out of that is plain MP4 file, JPEG, already stitched. So capturing everything. Take those files, put them on YouTube, put them on Facebook, and you get this 360 degree interactive view. No processing, you don't even need a computer. Straight from this, using your app or your smartphone, you can do it.
Oh, this is the tech that we've been waiting for. Now, Richard, if they want to find out more about the 360 cam, if they want to find out more about Gyroptic, where can they go?
360.tv, that's www.360.tv. Very simple. You go there, you get all the information, you can get contact, get in touch with us. There's a gallery with sample contents. Go there and don't hesitate to contact us if you have any questions.
Well, there you have it, VR folks. With Gyroptic, the world is all around you.
You know, with more and more VR headsets coming online, I could see the allure of taking 360-degree pictures.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like whenever it comes to action cameras, I always think to my motorcycle riding, and it would be really cool if you're wearing goggles to, like, look around.
Because we've both seen those YouTube demonstrations of, the one on a car as it's drifting. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool to be able to pick what you're looking at. And I can imagine, you know, in an Oculus Rift, being able to look around and see what happened on your vacation that you didn't see the first time. How cool would that be? You're like, oh, I didn't know that was happening behind me.
Right. Because you're definitely limited. I mean, there's a wide field of view on a lot of those cameras, but you aren't catching everything around you. I like that idea. The problem I had with them when they first came out was it was really low resolution for what you're getting. I think one of the first ones I tried was called the V360 or something like that, and it was... It touted itself as 4K resolution, but that was 4K resolution in a 360 degree, which then turned into a very, like, poor resolution when you were actually just looking at one thing at a time.
Having 640 by 480 cameras all around doesn't really impress. No. What we will start to see, though, as some of these sensors, like these 4K and even 8K sensors, are coming down in price, you're going to start to see products like this with three of those that aren't just clear, but they allow you to zoom in without really losing a lot of resolution. And that has me excited.
I like the idea of putting one on a drone, too, and then just flying the drone and not having to worry about, like, getting in for a shot or panning or something, you know, like that, where you can just follow where you want to look, you know, beyond the path.
You can be the post-flight producer.
Exactly.
And so rather than trying, oh, I have to get the shot, it's like, no, it's getting the shot. You just choose it later on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Of course, that's the promise. We'll see if they actually deliver on that in my lifetime. All right, let's go ahead and move on in just a bit. We're going to jump back into the feedback. We've told you that this was a feedback-heavy episode.
That's right.
But before we do that, you know what I want?
What's that?
I want all my media, Brian.
All your media?
All of it.
One easy to access.
One easy. I want it on my mobile device.
Ooh, yeah, I like that idea.
You know, I've got videos on my laptop. I've got music on my desktop. I've got a couple of pictures across my various phones and my tablets that I'd like to have all in one place. Have you ever gone to this? I actually just did this the other night, where you know you've taken a picture of something, or you know you've taken a video of something. Mm-hmm. You can't remember where it is. It hasn't synced up to your whatever cloud you're using, and you're like, oh, great, now I have to look through this. Was it this phone I was using back then?
Oh, I have things. I have backups of backups just because I wasn't 100% sure where I left it, but I know I have it somewhere.
Yeah. Well, folks, you could go through that nightmare of trying to locate your individual media on your individual device, or you could just use Unity. Unity is the easiest way, the best way to amalgamate all of the content that you love so very much. Now, I've told you, I have my movies on one computer. I have my videos on another computer. I may have my photos and my files across multiple computers, and I'm not able to access them really easily. Not without, you know, dropping them on the NAS or making a conscious decision to make sure that they're in the cloud, whatever cloud that I'm using for a particular device. But instead, I could just use Unity. Unity is a free, gratis, easy-to-install personal media server that connects your devices so that you can access all your content on the go without syncing, uploading, or configuring. Now, take a while to let that settle in. A lot of these devices that promise you a unified experience of media really want to retrain you to copy everything into one place. You don't have to do that with Unity. It takes care of the hard work for you. Now, with getunity.com/knowhow, you can stream your entire music collection to your mobile device, even iTunes music. You can stream your movie collection when you're traveling. You can share any of your media with your friends peer-to-peer, and your friends can stream directly to your computer. You can install Unity on every computer you want to access, and Unity will unify all your media and files into one organized menu in your Unity app. You can also automatically merge iTunes accounts and libraries. This is great for families and spouses. If you've got a lot of different devices, say a lot of iPhones, and each has its own iTunes account, and you don't want to have to track down who has what song and what movie and what piece of video, just use Unity. You can access all your Lightroom and Apple photo libraries and photo albums. You can post photos stored on your computer directly to Instagram. You can stream and share your GoPro videos. You can even use AirPlay to stream music or video straight to your TV. Folks, do it today. Create your own private media server at getunity.com/knowhow. That's getunity.com/knowhow and access all your media and files on your mobile devices for free. Again, that's getunity, getyounity.com/knowhow. And we thank Unity for their support of Knowhow. Hey, Brian, let's get back to the answers. Who's next?
All right. This next one comes from Rudy. And they ask, I've been using Freedom Pop as my phone service, but it doesn't work all the time. I think it's time to come out of the cave. How do I select a phone service? What are the hidden costs? What do you suggest for getting into the cell phone market?
Well, first of all, Rudy, I feel your pain. I understand. Freedom Pop.
I've never even heard of it.
Really?
No. Well, I'm on Verizon, and I've been on Verizon so long that I've grandfathered myself into the unlimited plan, and I have not strayed.
This is a Freedom Pop phone. So this is an LG G2. Mm-hmm. I actually picked this one up on one of their sales for, I think it was $75. Now, the cool thing about this is I don't pay a subscription. I get 500 megabytes of data free every month, and I get, I think it's unlimited talk and then like 100 text messages. And so I buy it. You buy it one time, and then you get that automatically. And, of course, they try to upsell you. If you want more data or faster data or if you want more text or, you know, et cetera, you can always buy that. But I keep one of these around because it's a nice emergency device. It runs on the Sprint network. So Freedom Pop is sort of it's an MVNO. It's a mobile virtual network operator. They don't have any of their own towers, but they piggyback on other service.
Which T-Mobile does the same thing.
Correct. Now, the nice thing about this is you can have basically a burner phone. So this is a $75 phone that has service. It's not the best service. It's not the fastest service. But I leave this in my bag because if I need it in a pinch, say I lose my phone, I break my phone, or if I just want to turn on a Wi-Fi hotspot and I'm kind of wary about my surroundings, this is the one that I use.
Or if somebody needs to borrow a phone in a pinch or something like that, I guess.
Yeah. The issue is, and this is what Rudy is running into, it's not the fastest on the planet, and their voice service kind of sucks. So if you actually want a phone, it's not good. I would say get this for the 500 megabytes of data a month and just use it as like a tablet. Other than that, it's kind of useless. In fact, this phone isn't even great. I got this because this is one of the few that will work with that SlimPort dock that I have.
How
about that? So here's what I would suggest, Rudy. This is something that I've been suggesting for a long, long time, and not enough people have heard about this. Now, there are plans that get way, way down there. T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint all have some very attractive plans. However, there is one that I still know and I still love. Alex, if you go to that link from Walmart, it's the T-Mobile monthly 4G 30-minute unlimited web and text with 100 minutes of talk. I have been using this for about 5 years now.
$30 a month?
It's $30 a month, and that's $30 prepaid. So that's all you pay. There are no taxes. There are no additional fees. It's $30, period.
That's not too shabby.
It's actually
I mean,
pretty
so long
good.
As T-Mobile is a decent service provider in your area or Sprint. You
know. Right, right.
Wow, okay. I did not know about that.
Yeah, now here's the cool thing about it. There is only 100 minutes, and some people will really lament that. I don't, because I don't spend 100 minutes on the phone. I just don't anymore. In fact, the only time I spend a decent amount of time talking on the phone is when I'm calling into radio shows, because I do a couple of those. And sometimes I can't use, like, internet telephony, so I will use my cell phone.
No, the only time I use up minutes is when I'm stuck on the phone with my internet service provider, Comcast.
There's probably something ironic about that.
Yeah, right?
But, okay. And the other thing is, it's unlimited text, which that's actually most of my communication.
Right.
And it's 4G data. So it's actually really, really fast. My phone is my primary way of watching YouTube and Netflix because both of those are included under Binge On. It doesn't count against my cap. I can watch as much of it as possible, which means that data doesn't count against my home cap, which is kind of cool.
No, I like that idea. Yeah. I'm thinking back to our previous... the guy who was having a problem with the Switch.
Right.
just get this plan and stream Netflix on that.
There you go. It's actually quite good. Now, I will say this. even if you're not using a service that's included with Binge On, and again, that's for T-Mobile, that's the services like YouTube, Netflix. I think they have something with MLB. I'd have to check the list again.
Without getting into net neutrality.
Yeah, let's not do that. That's for This Week in Enterprise Tech. But even if you're not using one of those services, you get 5 gigs every month. And it's not like it cuts out at 5 gigs. After you do 5 gigs, it will slow down to 3G speeds.
Okay, so they start to throttle you.
They'll start to throttle.
5 gigs.
It's pretty good.
I think that's about what I hit on my phone every month, so that's not too bad.
Yeah.
I'm gonna look it up.
Not bad at all. And here's the rub, though. It is incredibly difficult to get this plan through T-Mobile.
Really?
If you go to the T-Mobile website, I know it's on there. I have found it in the past. They do not make it easy. If you go to the prepaid plans, they bury it. They start it with the $40 plan. So the easiest way is to find a Walmart and find one of these kits for the $30 plan.
And then once you have the one, you just sign up for that plan, right?
You don't have to
keep going back to Walmart.
Right. And what I actually did was a while back I bought like a $300 recharge card.
Yeah.
And that just takes me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Boom. Okay. I had no idea you could do that.
You absolutely can do that. And what I like about that is it makes your bill incredibly regular. It's so strange because with the way that fees are structured, you could have the exact same plan, you could have the exact same usage, and your bill will vary from month to month. And that's so, it always struck me as so shady.
Oh, yeah.
This is $30. It's just $30.
Flat rate. That's the way it should be.
It really is.
I mean, you shouldn't have to go to Walmart to accomplish this, but I'm glad that it exists.
All right. Now, the other part of this equation is the phone. If you are saving so much money on the plan, and by the way, you are saving a lot of money. I remember I did this once. If you had a smartphone that had an $80 to $100 a month bill, which is pretty typical if you're not on a grandfathered plan, at the end of your 24-month contract, which you would need to own the phone that you got on contract, you will have spent something like $1,400 more than going with this prepaid plan and paying full price for the top-of-the-line, like $700 phone. So, yeah.
What if you wanted to add somebody to the plan? Is it just another $30?
Why do you think I have all these? I have burner chips. So seriously.
Why does a priest need burner chips?
When I go to DEF CON, that chip goes in. It's used once, then it gets tossed out. I'm sorry. I'm paranoid like that.
I do not blame you. After things I've seen at DEF CON, I understand.
I love it. But as far as looking at phones, I'm still a big fan of the OnePlus One. I don't like the OnePlus Two. Not a big fan of that.
The OnePlus One's fairly reasonable in price now, right?
Yeah, you can get that for, I could see them for like $150, $200.
Yeah.
You could also get the OnePlus X. I think that's like a $200 to $300 phone.
Yeah, that's like the smaller phone. It has like a glass back to it. Actually, I think we had it on All About Android. It looked like a pretty nice phone.
It's a decent phone. Also, the Nexus 5X, that's the one that Google just dropped down to $350. Mm-hmm. Or it starts at $350. That gets you the 16-gigabyte version. You're not a big fan of the Nexus line? I mean, yours is working okay, right?
No, I'm a big fan of the Nexus line. I've been using the Nexus XP, and my wife actually uses the 5X. Power users like Jason Howe and Florence Ion on All About Android have been running into issues, but they are probably the like 10% of people who are loading apps all the time, testing out new software all the time, having some issues. Really haven't had too many issues with my phone.
Cross fingers.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, the 5X, it's not perfect. Yeah. It's run into a few hiccups and stuff, but I think at that price point, it's still one of the better phones that you can get with a fingerprint reader and a decent camera. I think some of the issues it's run into is because of encryption. And I know that's been a big topic in the news lately, but there are ways to decrypt the 5X and then you'll get better performance. That's a whole nother thing, but as far as like budget phones that you can buy outright,
it's a pretty good budget phone.
I think the 5X is right up there.
Now, I will say, and remember what I just said about contract cost, you could buy yourself a brand new Samsung Galaxy 7 Edge.
Oh, yeah.
Pay the $700+ for it.
Yeah.
Hello, and at the end of the 24 months, you would still be way better off than getting an on contract phone. So I highly, highly recommend getting a prepaid. There's just something about having a prepaid plan. I love the fact that I could stop the plan at any given month and I get charged no early termination fee and it basically just turns off. So when I go out of the country for these extended periods of time, I don't have to keep paying a bill for something I'm not using.
Right. And so if you do travel outside the country with this phone and this plan, T-Mobile works on GSM, right?
Not this, though. So this, unfortunately, because it's the prepaid plan, they won't give you that international roaming that you get with
the But the phone that you plans. Used, you could pop a different SIM in.
That's what I did in Barcelona. Yeah, and actually, it was cheap. So I bought for 15 euro, which is something like $17, I got a one-month plan that included 8 gigabytes of data, 300 minutes, and unlimited text. So it's like, okay, well.
Yeah, that sounds like the way to go.
That's all I need.
Cool.
Well, folks, we know that this has been a lot of information. We know that this has been a lot of questions. We want to make sure that you can get the links to all of these and the links to all the things that we suggested. Like, for example, if you want to go ahead and grab yourself some of the devices that we talked about, if you want to find where you can get a T-Mobile SIM card, make sure to go our show notes.
Yes, twit.tv/KH. That's where all our prior episodes live. You can also subscribe or download the video of your choice. We've got audio, small, medium. I don't think it's called medium. And then we have
high bitrate.
HD version, which is handy to have when you want to rewind and double check some of the things that we're doing.
Fact check me, please do.
Yeah, right.
Also, don't forget that you can find us on our Google Plus page. Just go to Google Plus and look for Know How. The nice thing about that is you'll be able to get introduced to the 10,000, almost 10,000 strong army of know-it-alls. Mm-hmm. These are people who live, die, breathe DIY and maker projects. If you have a project that you want help with, if you want to help other people who have projects, please go to Google Plus and look for Know How. That's not the only place to find us.
No. If you like corgi gifts or you want to see what happens behind the scenes when we're not doing know-how or you want to know what's coming up on an episode, you can follow us on Twitter. I am cranky_hippo.
And I am at PadreSJ. And our technical director.
Our esteemed technical director.
Award-winning technical director.
Yeah. It's pronounced director.
Oh, I'm sorry. Our award-winning erector, his name is Bob. Bob can be found on Twitter at ANELF3.
Yes. Such a weird Twitter handle for Bob.
I think it's a German pronunciation.
It must be.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballister.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
good deeds.